All right. Last Lord's Day, I know we were having a discussion and we had some technical problems, and eventually it was at a point where I just couldn't stay online, so we didn't finish that conversation. I know Dante's is, I think it was mostly between you and me. I know we did have a visitor in the room, if I recall, and I don't remember particularly. But if you remember the subject matter and you want to pick back up on that, we could continue that discussion, maybe bring it to an end, and then move on to something new. So let me just give a moment. Okay. Puffy, if you have a question, go right ahead. If you want the mic, or do you want to put it in a text chat? Let me get off the mic for a moment, and if you want to pick up the mic, fine, and if not, you can put your question in a text chat, and we'll respond there. Okay. All right, I see the question here. I don't understand that the period between May 21st and October 21st. Okay, I suppose you're talking about what is being taught by Family Radio and by E-Bible Fellowship and various other groups. I know the Latter Rain group is also looking into that and studying that. I have listened very, very attentively to some of the studies. I have to admit I haven't listened lately, to particular anything particular. I did hear Chris last Lord's Day, if I recall, speak a little bit on it, and during the week, I listen to Family Radio often during the week when I'm running around in my vehicle, and which has been a lot lately, and I haven't heard anything particularly new, but I will say that I have heard the most of the major parts of their studies, and how they work out the calculations to come to this idea of 153 days after the May 21st date, which up to the May 21st date, to me, it's crystal clear. The calendar is pretty clear in my thinking and understanding, looking at the Bible and carefully going through it. But after that May 21st date, it becomes very cloudy for me. I had a position back a few years ago that there may be an additional 153 days added to the 8,400 days. I didn't have a strong position on that, but I had a position or an idea that that might be the case. I was looking at the verse concerning the 153 fish. And that's exactly the verse that they look at when they come to the conclusion, 153, and they add 153 days. I think the main part of their thinking is that 153 equals 5 months. And so they tie that 153 into 5 months. I find a problem doing that, although I do know that I was shown something some months back, I don't recall exactly that I can articulate it, but that there may be a biblical position to tie in a five-month period to the 153 fish. But nothing that gave me any strong appreciation that it should be done. So I kind of, I believe that the probability is that the last day will be on or about or around May 21st. I don't see an additional 5 months, but that doesn't mean that there isn't. There could be. And so we have to continue to look into the Bible. Now, as far as the what's taken place during that 5 months, what is suggested that has taken place, and it's being taught actually as if it's a fact, I'm a little disturbed about that. I'm kind of surprised by Brother Campin holding such a strong position that it is absolute. His position is very, very absolute that 2011 is the end of the world. I'm pretty sure, someone will correct me here if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure his position is absolute. There's no question about it. There's no question mark. There's no percentage of 99.9. It's 100%. I wouldn't go so strong. I would go to the 99.99% because I still want to rest in the idea that I possibly could be wrong. And if we have, as long as we hold on to that possibility, because I think we should in everything we think, hold on to that possibility, with the exclusions of certain things, you know. Of course, you know, Christ is Lord. There's nothing to be questioned about that. Grace is the way to salvation. It's the work of God. There's absolutely nothing to question about that. But with those foundational points, of course, we can never move. But as far as a conclusion like this, I think we have to leave ourselves open. Maybe there's something in the Bible that we haven't seen yet, and we haven't discovered. And maybe it'll push us into 2012. Maybe it'll push us back to 2010. I mean, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think it's pretty slim, but I have to admit the possibility is there. We just, there's things we may have not have seen. It's that simple. So, my position on 2011 is pretty strong, but I have to be ready for correction, as a Berean is required to be. Now, as far as the period between May 21st and the October 21st date, which is 153 days, as far as looking at that and what's going on during that time period, if there is an extension in time in 153 days, and if that is a correct way of thinking about it, I don't see that as a hell on earth. I do not see that as a time period when only the unsaved would be left here. It is very, very, I think it's in opposition to everything that the Bible teaches to have that kind of a thing. But again, you know, I know people are holding that position, and I have yet to see the study that has convinced me. But the verses that they're using, I can clearly say without any reservation, are verses that cannot support their thinking. You know, let's take a look at just some of the verses. The main thrust of the verse that started all this comes from Revelation chapter 9. And particularly, there is a focus on a five-month period within this chapter. It identifies with the fifth angel. And a couple of things, right off the surface of this chapter, there is a great denial because of the number five that is in view. It is the fifth trumpet. God identifies that fifth trumpet with the first woe. And he makes it clear, crystal, crystal clear, that the first four trumpets are sounded, and then the next three trumpets are sounded. Now, we did discuss this last Sunday, and if anybody wants me to get into more detail about this, we will, you know, just when I finish, you can ask the question and we'll get into more detail. Or you can go and listen to last Sunday's conversation, and we covered a lot of this detail here on these three woes and the seven trumpets and the relationship, how the three woes identify with the last three of the seven trumpets, and how the first four trumpets start off first, and then the next three trumpets are chronological to the first four trumpets. In other words, the first four trumpets must come to pass first, and then the next three trumpets. And they're referred to as three woes. Woe number one is trumpet number five, woe number two is trumpet number six, and woe number three is trumpet number seven. And God is crystal clear, crystal, crystal clear, that woe number one first comes, and then there are two more woes thereafter. So they're chronological, in order, by number. Woe number two comes, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly. There is one more woe yet to come, and it cometh quickly. God is very, very clear. The language cannot be confused. Unless there's another way to see this, and we have some verses that could give us a different way of looking at this, it is pretty clear. Now, that being said, that puts, and the fifth trumpet is the loosing of Satan. And very, very careful Bible studies, and we have done these Bible studies, which are available up on BibleOnly.net, we have discovered that the fifth trumpet identifies with the loosing of Satan. It is the beginning of the Great Tribulation, the fifth trumpet, which is Revelation chapter 9, verse 1. Now, it's been taught for quite some time now that the Great Tribulation started in May of 1988. And we've come to discover a few years back that that's an incorrect conclusion. That in 1988, May of 1988, which I believe was May 21st of 1988, what started then was what God calls and gives us a name called the beginning of sorrows. And the beginning of sorrows is referred to as the beginning of judgment. It is referred to as the tribulation, but it is not referred to as the megas tribulation, the great tribulation. It is the tribulation that is referred to as immediately after that tribulation. The sun is darkened, the moon doesn't give forth its light, and so on, which is the language, which we're going to look at in a minute, which is the language of Revelation chapter 9. And the sun being darkened, that is. And so, May 21st of 1988 was the beginning of judgment upon the church. It was, God refers to it as the beginning of sorrows. He makes the statement concerning this in Matthew 24 and in Luke that the end is not yet, and the end that is being referred to is the question of when is the end of the world that was asked in the beginning of Matthew 24. And we've discovered that that phrase is centilia alienos, centilia. Well, let me go look at that. That's Matthew chapter 24. Elion, I think it is. Okay, the end of the world, which is the phrase centilia ahion. Now, the phrase centilia ahion, we have done a very, very in-depth careful study of that phrase, and we have discovered that that identifies with the end of the church age. So we can look at that phrase of the end of the world as meaning the end of the church age. And the end of the church age begins when Satan is loosed. That's the end of the church age. And it is symbolized by the darkening of the sun, which again we'll look at back in a minute. But this is something that many have missed, and they haven't yielded to the study maybe to consider it, but in any event, they've missed it, and therefore, if you build upon something that is a false foundation, an error, you're going to have other flaws within that construction, and there's going to be some more error, of course, and eventually it will collapse. And I think we've gotten to the point of collapse right now as we look at the study, because they've taken conclusions of Revelation chapter 9 and have given another conclusion, which we'll discuss in a minute. But they've given it a conclusion as they refer to as hell on earth, and I'm going to show as we look at this and understand it correctly, that is not identifying with that in that sense. But the idea of the phrase of hell on earth beginning in Revelation chapter 9 is kind of a very interesting conclusion. Of course, they're looking at a different time period, but the reference of the words and the phrase and the placing in Revelation chapter 9, and they're identifying with a time period of 153 days after the 8400 days, which is between May 21st, 2011, and October 21st, 2011. They're calling that hell on earth. Well, all the description that they're talking about in a physical sense is being seen by us clearly in a spiritual sense. And that has started back in September 6, 1994, spiritually speaking, which is exactly what Revelation chapter 9, verse 1 is focusing in on. And I'm very, very strong in that position. It is in perfect harmony in everything else we study, and as we look at the framework of the chronology of end time events. Now, we've been looking at that framework for quite some time now. I think maybe going back to 2002 is when we really started to look at this framework. I think that's when we discovered it. We discovered that the seven trumpets is the framework of the chronology of end time events. In other words, God has given us a picture that is the seven trumpets for the purpose of seeing a chronological understanding of all things concerning end time events as we look at it in the book of Revelation and throughout the entire Bible. And so I think that is clearly laid out, and it, and again, we've done this in a past study, but it is clearly laid out between Revelation chapter 8, 9, and God lays out the chronology very, very He makes these fixed points that seems that you cannot seem to move. Nine. Now, when we get into now looking at this period of time, which is 2,300 days, and we've looked at the language of Daniel concerning this 2,300 days, and we saw how it is referring to a time period that brings us to the abomination of desolation, that there is a cleansing taking place, and that cleansing is being brought forth by the fire, the judgment of God upon the earth, upon the corporate church. And so since the word earth is figurative language of the corporate church, and when we read a phrase like in Matthew 24, I think it's verse 3, where the question is asked, what will be the sign of coming in the end of the world, we can appreciate it as the end of the earth. The world that is in view has to be understood by the context, okay? And when we read our Bibles, the word world, depending on the context, could identify with the entire world. But it also could be identifying with the Roman world, the Roman Empire. It could identify only with the church, with the Christianity, that world. So it depends on the context to appreciate how large a view to see of this world, word world. And the earth identifies clearly with the world. So the end of the world, or the end of the earth, or the end of the church age, they're all synonymous. And that's what's in view. It's not, the question was not, and is not, when shall be the end of the world in its literal sense, but when shall be the end of the world in the spiritual sense, meaning the corporate church, where God is no longer going to deal and use the corporate church to bring the gospel to an unsaved world. And we're at that point now where He is no longer using that. So, now let's go look at Revelation 9 and look at some of the language that is being used to identify with a hell on earth. It is interesting that the picture is a hell on the earth, because I agree with that. But hell on earth is identifying with hell in the church, in the corporate body, in the corporate church. We have discovered in our studies not too long ago that the Great Lake of Fire is really a picture of the corporate church. Now, to be cast into that Great Lake of Fire is identifying with a judgment. And that's exactly what we see the church. The church is aflame, it's on fire, and it has become a lake of judgment, a lake of fire. And that's where all of the unsaved claiming to have truth, God has given us the picture of His being there. Now, of course, in there, some there could still be some saved individuals in... Hang on a second. There could be some saved individuals in the corporate church, of course, as far as being God's elect, but they will only respond to a gospel outside of the church, because there is a false gospel only going forth inside the church. Now, when we look at this language of the fifth messenger, and by the way, the picture of the corporate church being a picture of hell, or being a picture of a lake of fire, that is also a picture of eternity, whatever hell is. It's really a picture of being brought under the judgment of God. And in my understanding at this point, I am totally unclear on what eternal hell is. I cannot give any kind of a definition whatsoever of it, because I see a couple of different possibilities, and I don't know which one might be true. So, but we do know one thing. We can say one thing about hell. This is absolute, that hell is the separation from God, to be cast away. He gives us the language of being cast into eternal darkness, and or the eternal flame. So the corporate church has become a picture of eternal hell, whatever it is. And this, and God does this often. You know, remember when He came and they asked for a sign, Lord, tell us a sign, and He said, there'll be no sign given you except the sign. I think it was called the sign of Jonah, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish. So shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And it's a very interesting picture, because the belly of the fish identifies with the place where it identified really with the corporate body, the corporate church. The belly is the birthing place. It is the womb. And so it's a very interesting picture as we've looked into that. But the heart of the earth also is the belly of the earth. It identifies with ultimately being in the womb, in the birthing place, and is referred to as a birthing place in other language, like in Matthew 24, I believe, and some other places concerning the end. And God refers to as a woman in travail and so on. So a lot of language are tied together there to get the proper picture of what God is speaking about. But He gives us that parable. So we can see how God has taken something in the Old Testament, something in the past, and has given him, taken that picture and has flipped it, the belly of the fish to the heart of the earth, and referring it to the end of the world. And now we have the corporate church, which is a flame on fire, which is a picture of something to come, the eternal flame, the eternal fire, the eternal damnation, again, whatever that might be. Now, let's look at the language of Revelation 9 just a little bit, and maybe we can point out some of the places of problems why it cannot mean what some are suggesting it means. First of all, as I mentioned, the chronology, the time period that is in view in Revelation 9 is September 6, 1994. And this goes up until the next trumpet, which brings us to the fall of 2001. Is a 7-year period, and it's a few days over 7 years. I think I forget how many days, maybe 40 days or something over a 7-year period. But anyway, in Revelation chapter 9, it starts off in verse 1, and the fifth messenger sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven onto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. This is the end of the church age. This is the centelia aeon, the end of the world that is asked about in Matthew 24. I think it's in verse 3, and this is the time of darkness. The representation of the fact that a great furnace was open and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. The sun identifies with the gospel, and remember, the church is supposed to bring forth the light into an unsaved world, into a world of darkness, and the air is the place of conversation. They're supposed to be bringing the gospel, the conversation of the Word of God, but they were darkened by reason of the loosing of Satan. And why was Satan loosed? Satan was loosed because God has set this for a judgment. He has loosed Satan as a judgment upon the corporate church. They preferred the lie, and so God sends them strong delusion that they should receive that lie. And they are worshiping Satan in place of Christ. And so as we look at this picture here, we see that it has now become the teaching of darkness, the kingdom of darkness. And there's a lot of words and phrases here to get the really good picture of this we need to look into. But again, we've done all these studies, and of course we can look and discuss any particular one of these words and look deeper and deeper. But they are available, again, up on the BibleOnly.net, and it's open for discussion, of course, here on the Lord's Day. Any word or phrase that might be a problem to someone to say, well, how do we look at this if we're going to conclude that? And we can look at that. But anyway, there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. Now here's the interesting picture. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green tree, neither any tree, green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their forehead. Now, Well, let me read on, and we're going to come back to verse 4, because I think this might be an important point. I didn't see this before, but let me see if I understand this correctly. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when it striketh a man. Now, I didn't realize this before until just now, but Revelation 4 also denies the conclusion that's being offered, because it said that it was commanded them, who, the scorpions of the earth is the corporate church, they have a power, the scorpion is the poisonous gospel, it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass. The grass is identifying with something that is green of the earth, neither any green thing. So it's the trees. There's some green trees out there. There's some green grass out there that still are there. And that identifies with the elect. And if the elect has been removed off of this world, out of this world, in a rapture in May 21st, and then there's a 5 months of hell on earth, if that is the case, and of course, I don't see any language that suggests that, but if that conclusion was correct, and then God cast the rest of this world into hell after that 5 months, and then at that point it is being taught that that is annihilation. Now, what's the purpose of the 5 months? Why is only a few people going through that 5 months? How is it that a person who is dead and has no consciousness, their bones being screwed all over the place, screwed out and cast all over the earth, how that can be some kind of a shame to them when they have no consciousness to begin with? And they haven't discussed that they did have a consciousness, but to the best I understand, there is no consciousness according to their teaching. And that's just to begin with. But the main thing here in Revelation 9 verse 4 is, what's up with these green things? What's up with the trees? And clearly God relates the green things, the grass, the green things, and the trees to men. Let's look at this again. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth. That's something that's green. It still has some water being given to it. Neither any green thing, means some gospel is still being given to some of these things, are still being fed that are in the earth. Neither any tree, and again, you know it, a tree by its fruits. And in this case, these are ones that are under the care of God that are not to be hurt. And then he refers to them as men. But only those men which have not the seal of God, which is to infer that they have the seal of God in their foreheads. And then he goes on and discusses this time period concerning this. And it was given unto them that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when it striketh a man. Now, the word torment is one of the key things here. And I see your hand up, Dantes. I'll be off in a minute. The word torment is one of the key words here, because how are we to understand torment? Some people read torment and they read torture. Well, it doesn't say torture. Some people read torment and they fill in the blank on what they think torment is. Well, God describes the torment. He says their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. Now, we could look into nature and we could see the nature of a scorpion when it striketh a man or it striketh a prey. It's prey. And what a scorpion will do, it'll come front head on to its prey, and it's got its stinger that will reach out around and behind its prey and sting it as it's capturing its focus towards itself. It is really taking a behind the back attack with its stinger, because it's got a very, its tail has a long stinger, it's a long tail with a stinger on it. And when he stings his prey becomes paralyzed. And that's a picture of a paralyzing gospel. The fact of the poison is similar to that of the poisonous asp or any poisonous snake that is in view. The scorpion is always related to the snake throughout the Bible. And often, more often than not, you'll see the snake and the scorpion together. And so it is the picture of Satan and the working of Satan, the kingdom of Satan, his false prophets, false teachers, and the poison that comes forth from the asp or from the scorpion, again, is the poisonous gospel. It's mesmerizing. It is a gospel that paralyzes and captures. And that's what's in view. And what happens after it captures or paralyzes its prey? Well, it devours them alive. And therein is the picture of what Satan does. Satan feeds off the flesh of the unsaved. We've looked at that study in the two spirits. The spirit of God feeds the body, and the spirit of man, which identifies with the Antichrist, Satan himself, God gives us the picture of a parasite that feeds off of the flesh. And to feed off the flesh, to eat the flesh, is a picture, spiritually speaking, of feeding off the sins of those individuals, because the sins are manifested in the flesh. And therefore, to eat the flesh is to feed off the sins of the flesh of the individuals that are committing those sins. And that's how Satan is fed. And the more and more they sin, the more and more deteriorated, spiritually speaking, they become. They're dead in their sins. But to try to sum this up, to finish this off, in verse 6, and in those days... interesting phrase, those days, and that should be studied, because there are two periods of those days. There is those days in the tribulation, which is called the beginning of sorrows, and there is a period of those days that is referred to as the great tribulation, and very well may be isolated with a 7-year period, by the way, which I haven't looked into close enough yet to conclude that, but I think it might be. And in those days men shall seek death and shall not find it. They shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Now, this is being interpreted as a literal death, whereas we look at it, at least I look at it, as a spiritual death. You remember in Romans, God speaks of the old man must be buried. He must be put off the old man and put on the new man. We must be buried with Christ and therefore risen with him. And that is the death that they're seeking, to put off the old man, to be buried with Christ, to have the resurrection with Christ if we are buried with him. And that's the death that they're seeking. They're seeking salvation and shall not find it. We see another picture of seeking salvation, which is referring to this very time period right now we're speaking about, and echoes back into the days of Lot. And remember Lot, right before he came out of the city, and they tried to break through the doors, and the messengers that were in the house pulled Lot back into the house and shut the door. And then the Bible recorded that the people outside who were trying to break down the door, that they wearied themselves to find the door. They could not find the door. It fleed from them, spiritually speaking. They couldn't find it. They were blinded from seeing the door. And this is the same kind of a picture. Men shall seek death and shall not find it. They shall not find the ability to be buried with Christ, to be dead in their sins, to be putting off the old man, to put on the new. They will not find it. So in those days men shall seek death, shall not find it, shall desire to die, death shall flee from them. And it goes on, there's a lot of language here in Revelation 7, 9-7, we read the shapes of the locusts were like with the horses prepared unto battle, horses identify with corporate churches, and their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold. There are many heads, and, the body of Christ has only one head, which is Christ. The crown, and the fact that given crowns identify with the fact that they're ruling. And they appear to be ruling in the kingdom of heaven, but they're not. It's crowns like gold. They are not crowns of gold. And it goes on to tell us the faces were the faces of men. God is speaking about men. So there's a lot of language to look at. But on every level and every step, everything that I can tell that is being taught concerning this 5-month hell on earth, if there's any merit to it, they're certainly using the wrong verses to give any merit to it. And then the verses they're referred to back into the Old Testament clearly are tied into the language of Revelation 9, and therefore cannot be used to identify with a hell on earth in the sense of the sense that they're talking about. But I do agree that there is a hell on earth in the sense that, and that started in September 6, 1994, when the corporate church started to become that lake of fire, and the lake of fire identifies with hell, and therefore it is the hell on earth, and the earth being figurative language of the corporate church. So, there is a lot to look at, a lot of word studies to do, a lot of phrase studies to do. And unfortunately, I think that's where the problem is they're not doing careful word and phrase studies of those verses. And therefore, they're coming to false conclusions. Alright, hopefully I've given a good enough explanation of that, and try not to get too deep or too difficult, but it does require a tremendous amount of Bible study to come to the proper conclusion here in these areas. And unfortunately, I think that they're lacking the phrase and word studies, and therefore finding themselves in error. And let me just make one more point or statement before I get off the mic and yield it to Dantes. Because they have a misunderstanding of this, remember, you know, up until only recently, the past so many years, nobody understood the book of Revelation. Nobody understood the meaning of Revelation chapter 9. Nobody knew about the beginning of sorrows. Nobody understood the timing and the chronology of the end time events. Nobody knew the end of the world date or any of those things. And therefore, the bottom line is this is not required knowledge in order to be saved. And it's an unfortunate thing, again, as many people teach, or they may deny it, but they act as if there must be some kind of an agreement with how they think about things, otherwise you're unsaved and we know better than you. We can never hold that kind of position. So all these people that are family radio listeners, I'm still a family radio listener, all these people that are family radio listeners, that's not going to have any effect on their salvation, because God has them in the blind for whatever purpose he has them in the blind for these things, which means the same thing for those who are with eBible or with any other group. It does not matter. But we want to be very careful, you know, what is a heresy. A heresy is one of the major heresies, really, is the gospel of works. That's a clear heresy. We cannot deny that, and we cannot move from that position. And there are some others, but they're mostly focused in on salvation and our understanding of salvation, and a teaching of a poisonous gospel in place of a true gospel. But to have an error does not mean anyone is unsaved, because if that's the case, then everyone is unsaved, because no one has the complete truth. But anyway, with that, let me yield the mic to Dantes. Go right ahead.
All right. Thanks, John. Well, by the way, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but you are coming in and out a little bit on the mic, similar to what was happening last Sunday. We'll come back this time. I wanted to just comment a little bit about the Revelation chapter 9, verse 4. And I know you mentioned, I'm not sure if you're aware. Oh, I am. Well, might be a pal talk glitch altogether. I know Puffy was having a similar problem. Okay, well, we may have to. Looking at the mic there, it seems like, as far as I'm concerned, from my point, that the audio appears to be good. Anyone else having trouble listening or hearing? Oh, it is clear at the moment. Okay, so it's not just you then. It's got to be a pal talk thing. All right. Well, maybe I should just maybe try and leave the room and come back and see what happens. But well, let me just say real quick. You know, those who talk about the 5 months, when you look at Revelation chapter 9, verse 4, they do have an explanation for that. I'm not sure if you were aware of that, is that because the believers are raptured on May 21, then when we read here that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green tree, that's because the believers are no longer on the earth. Now, I don't happen to agree with that for the same reasons, pretty much, that you were talking about, that this has to do with the latter part of the tribulation, and the fact that the believers, they're not to be hurt, simply means they've already come out of tribulation, and so now the focus of judgment is not on the believers anymore, but rather it's on those who remain unsaved within the corporate body. All right, but I'll just leave it at that for now. And I'll give you back the mic.
All right, well, thanks for clarifying that. And, yeah, leaving the room, I don't know that that's going to help, because it appears it's, we all share this. I know PalTalk recently updated or upgraded or whatever you want to call it, only a couple of weeks ago, I think. And it was for me, it was a forced update. I didn't volunteer for it, but I was rebooted by them. And I presume everyone else has been. And maybe the problem is a glitch in it, because it seems that ever since the update has come that we've had a problem. Okay, yeah, I was not aware that they had dealt with that. I still see a problem with their conclusion. Although I agree that there could be a possibility of appreciating it in a different way. But we'd have to have that confirmed by other scriptures. It would have to continue to be in consistency with everything else we know about this particular time period and subject. And of course, in that case, that being the case, it is not. The other problem, of course, major problem, is the chronology of the three woes, woe number one, woe number two, woe number three. And woe number one is the loosing of Satan, and that's what God is speaking about, that time period, which was September 6, 1994. And the second woe is the period of time when the body of Christ comes out of the church, come out of my people. There's very, very specific information on that in Revelation chapter 11 on that. And then woe number three is the revealing of the end of the world in a literal sense, in the sense that judgment day is coming. The beginning of the sounding of the seventh trumpet, when it begins to sound, the mystery of God should be known, and that mystery that is in view, I believe, can only be the mystery of the return of Christ. That's the big question, the big focus. That's what all things focus in on concerning truth. We're looking for the return of Christ. You know, Old Testament believers looked for the coming Messiah. We look back at the cross, but we are looking also for the coming of Christ, to judge the living and the dead, and to take us off into eternal eternity. And so the Bible tells us that we'll look for and hastening towards this period, this point in time. Now, God has kept us in the dark of that point in time, in the sense that he didn't reveal any dates or anything, and we can surmise, probably, because he didn't want us to be focused on that. He wanted us to be focused on bringing the gospel to an unsaved world. I know Brother Campin has come up with that conclusion quite some time ago, and I agree with it. But only now he wants us to be focused towards it. Now he wants us to look for and hasten towards that point in time. Now he wants us to declare it, because declaring it is judgment. The Lord has come in a day and an hour that they are not aware of, the Bible tells us. And they don't know that they are wretched. They don't know that they are dead. They're so self-deceived. And the declaring that this is the way God made it, and he also requires that we declare that judgment has come upon the corporate church, which God refers to that as the meat of this season, or the meat of due season. In other words, the preaching of judgment coming upon the church. And the preaching of judgment, even though we're not preaching it in churches, definitely are being heard in churches, and we see that figurative language back in the days of Moses, when Moses was up in the mountain, and the people down in the camps is pictures of the corporate church down in the camps. They heard the sound extremely loud, and again the sounds of thunder, and that picture of thunder is the picture of judgment. We have we have John, who is referred to as John and James, as the sons of thunder, because they were coming with a judgment position, and of course Christ corrected that and said, that's not the spirit you are. The time of judgment is now. Now is the time of declaring judgment, but up until that time, it was a time of declaring in the corporate churches, to the corporate church, peace. And now we're no longer declaring peace to the corporate church. The clouds have been commanded that they bring no peace, no rain upon it, no gospel upon it, but only the thunder that's being heard exceedingly loud, from off of the mountaintop. And again, that's where the body of Christ is today. They're up on the mountaintop. And the declaration of judgment is that thunder exceedingly loud. So, anyway, for those reasons, and, you know, and now, you know, to look deeper into these things, it just becomes more and more clear that it is a fatal error. And when I say fatal, I mean fatal error in understanding, not fatal error in their salvation. Because, and again, you know, I believe that, well, God has a purpose for this. There is a reason why many are being led down a path of error. There is a reason for this. And I feel that I understand that reason. I think the reason for this, and it's something we all have to realize and we can all learn from, and they will too, by God's mercy, learn from it, and that is that we're not to follow men. That's a big problem. I've been a family radio listener for a long time. Let me see how many years. I think over 30. Well over 30. Over 30 years I've been listening to family radio. And I remember my first Bible conference, and maybe not necessarily the first one, but very, very quickly, as I was going to Bible conferences, I saw that people were blindly following Brother Campin. Now, it just so happened that Brother Campin had great, great correct positions, so, you know, they were in good grounds, but they were trusting in men. And that has not changed. You know, I remember being at Bible conferences and having an opposite opinion of Brother Campin, and some people really got upset. I mean, really, very, very angry, almost to the point of venom, literally. And that's not a good sign. It's not a good sign. And maybe that's what God is doing, is purging that out, purging out the venomous. Also, bringing to light of the people that don't realize that they're following men, and bringing them to the point where they will come to a brick wall, so to speak, and say, wait, you know, I've been following a man, you know, and not God. Now, you know, when we're young, in the sense as God refers to us as those who are sucklings, you know, we can only follow men, or we follow our parents, which ultimately is the core of the church, ultimately is the picture of the mother, which nurses us. And that's the way God set it up. But at some point in our time, we have to be weaned from the breast, drawn from the breast, weaned from that breast, and start to eat the meat of the word on our own. And I think that's the picture we might be able to view, that there's got to come to a time when we're really directly, straightforward following Christ and being Bereans only to others. I don't think anyone should ever sit under the teaching of anyone blindly just accepting whatever they're teaching. You need to be opening your Bible as the Bible commands us and being Bereans. Now again, those nursing off the milk may not be Bereans. They cannot be Bereans yet. But once you wean from that milk, you're drawn from those breasts, and you're beginning to eat the meat, you're becoming Bereans. And you need to be opening your Bible. And anybody who agrees with any man in this on this whole world, 100%, that says you have a problem. Anybody following men, you have a problem. I haven't met a human being in my lifetime thus far, and I don't think I ever will, save Christ, of course, who was a human being also, but other than Christ, that I haven't found disagreement with somewhere on something. Because everyone has error. And I might be discovering the error, or that might be the error in me, you know, seeing something wrong in them that's not. So, as far as the teaching is concerned. So, key thing that could be taught by this whole thing is that we need to be Bereans. We need to be more humble, and we also need to be more tolerant. You know, we preach about others being not tolerant, and we don't look at ourselves. We need to be more tolerant. And merciful. Now, not tolerant to the point to allow heresy in. Of course, that's not to that point. That would be something different. But anyway. Alright, let me get off the mic. I don't know if we want to dig any deeper here, if anybody has anything. To dig deeper or to look at some other subject, the mic is open and see if someone has something. If someone wants to put a question in a text chat, we can respond there too. So let me get off the mic for a moment and see what someone might have.
Just real quick, you know, in talking about the 5 months and the bones, there's a verse that I posted earlier, Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 1. And I know this is one verse among a few others that's being used to support the idea of hell on earth and the resurrection of the bones to shame them, as you were talking about earlier, John. Now, and I always try to point out that, you know, we should look at these verses very, very carefully, because God here in Jeremiah chapter 8 verse 1, at that time, saith the Lord, they shall bring out the bones of the kings of Judah and the bones of his princes and the bones of the priests and the bones of the prophets and the bones of the inhabitants of Jerusalem out of their graves. Now, it's very significant that God is identifying who the bones are. They identify with the prophets, the teachers, the priests, right? The kings of Judah. It's all a focus on the spiritual Israel. It's all a focus on the churches and congregations, which does tie in ultimately to the latter part of the Great Tribulation, as God is bringing judgment upon the bones. Now, the bones identify with people. If we study the word bones carefully in the Bible, God speaks of the bones and talking about those within the corporate body as a whole. Now, the focus, whether or not it's talking about the first part of the tribulation or whether it's talking about the unsaved, those of the synagogue of Satan coming under judgment, that is going to be determined by the context. And so this year, I really do think ties into Revelation chapter 9. And also, if you notice that God is repeating the word bones 5 times, right? And we're talking about the 5 months period. That 5 months is not a literal 5 months. It's really the number 5 pointing to the judgment that comes upon the rest of the body. We have the 10 virgins, right? 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. And those who were wise identify with the believers. That's the grace that comes upon the people of God. But those who were foolish, again, identified, typified by the number 5 in the context of judgment. And so, looking at the 5 months itself, the 5 months really is a picture of the judgment that comes upon the churches and congregations. These are the bones that are spread out. Now, they have no burial. Now, I think some other verses where we read about the valley of dry bones, and God says that there's no life in these bones. Now, that's a focus on the entire corporate body as the church is coming into the tribulation. And then God speaks, and he brings life to the bones, right? And that's a picture of the depart out. That's those identify with the believers who come under the grace of God. But also in the same context of judgment, those who do not come out of tribulation, those who are not resurrected, their bones are still spewed out in the city being the corporate body, the church. And they are not finding the burial that you were talking about. They do not find a burial in Christ. Now, as far as a literal 5 months, it is interesting. And I happen to think the same thing to some degree, that the literal 5 months could be a testing period. God somehow has worked out the calendar so that we have both we come to the spiritual by comparing the Bible with the Bible. So we come to understand that these 5 months, the shutting of the doors, the Son of Man being revealed, all of that identifying with the judgment that comes upon the churches and congregations. And we saw that here in verse 1 of Jeremiah chapter 8, that this is a focus not on the world. It's not a general resurrection. God is very specific in talking about the kings of Judah and so on. So we know that there is a spiritual application to the 5 months. But now we look at the calendar, and so we see that there is a literal 5 months, right? Bringing us all the way to the Feast of Tabernacles. But again, the Bible speaks of the Feast of Tabernacles as happening today, right? We read that in Zechariah chapter 13, I think, where God says that, let's see. Hang on a second. Zechariah chapter 13, we read, for example, in, actually, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 16, and it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Now this language here is very interesting, because God is talking about those that are left. That's the remain, that's the remnant. That identifies with the true believers. They come out of tribulation. And so they go up, right, come up hither, flee to the mountains. They go up to worship the King, that's Christ, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So that's the spiritual feast that believers are to be observing today. Verse 17, and it shall be that whosoever will not come up of all the nations of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. So they don't get the latter rain. They don't identify with the believers. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not up that have no rain, there shall be the plague. That's the plague that we read about in the book of Revelation, right? There shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And so we see that even the Feast of Tabernacles is something that is spiritual and happening, is identified with our day. But God gives us a literal feast when we look at the calendar. So now the question is, are we putting more emphasis on the literal, or are we being guided by the spiritual nature of the Bible? Now, I think God has given us both for a reason, and again, the idea of testing could very well be in view. But I really don't see the concept of hell on earth, because the language that is being used to support that conclusion, I think we can see pretty much from the Bible that God will not allow that insofar as the literal is concerned. And so now we're left with the actual 5 months. And it's interesting also to see that God talks about the 153 fish. Now the number 153 is broken down into 3 times 3 times 17, I believe. And the number 17 identifies with coming under the care of Christ. Now, I happen to think that, from my own studies anyway, that even that 153 identifies with those who come out of tribulation. It's a picture of all the believers, right, during this time period. And not really pointing at all to the literal 5 months that we see between May and October of 2011. So what do we do with the 5 months? Well, we have to wait on the Lord. And as John said earlier, that it's very possible that I happen to think that the Lord might take the world all the way to October and actually keep the literal Feast of Tabernacles, which has been a pattern in the Bible, as a matter of fact. And so we have to wait on the Lord. So that could be the possibility that the 153 is being added to the 8,400 days. It could be that May 21 might be the end, and God does not actually have anything else planned after that. But to really be dogmatic about the May 21st and not looking at the scriptures, all of these passages very carefully in the light of the whole Bible, it does appear to be something that we have to be careful at. Because if we do come to May 21 and the end does not take place, then there is the, as John was saying earlier, the possibility that people will come to realize that they were not trusting the Bible altogether. They're just listening to what someone else, or coming to a conclusion based on someone else's interpretation of some of the verses in the Bible. Yeah, that's correct, John. 3 times 3 times 17 is 153. And I don't see the number, I don't see judgment there. We know that the number 23 identifies with judgment. And that's one of the questions that was brought up in talking about the 5 months, is, well, how is it then, how could it be a time of judgment when the number 23 is not featured at all? And I think the explanation that was given is that, well, on the one hand, we have the number 17, the fact that the believers have been raptured, and then the other side of the coin. I'll go ahead and comment on that if I can in a little bit, but the other side of the coin was that the judgment comes upon those who are not raptured. But what I'm saying is, I don't see that in the number 153, because the number 23 is not identified with that at all. Now, the 3 and the 50s, are you saying that, let's see, alright, so the 3 times 51 is 153, right? Yeah. And the captain in the 50s, I see that as the one-third. You know, the Bible identifies the true believers with the one-third. We read about that in the Old Testament. And, yeah, I think we can look at that account when the first captain with the 50 was destroyed, right? And then the second captain with the 50 was destroyed. But yet the third captain, so that would have been the two-thirds. That's the two-thirds portion that we read about that has the mark of the beast in the book of Revelation. And then we see that the one-third, the last 50, that they were spared. And that also appears to be a picture of the believers coming out of tribulation. They're not taken in the entire judgment process. All right. Here's the mic, John.